When did we start labeling generations?
Well, you know, it's really hard to know when generations started being labeled for the first time, but in retrospect, baby boomers were the first generation to be labeled by the Census Bureau, and they're actually the only generation to be labeled by the Census Bureau. So they actually do have a title, and from then on, we became interested in looking at generations as they are, they're titled, they're categorized, and so it was really easy from that point on to move on and label the generations that came after them. And then, of course, in retrospect, you look at some of the work by Howe and Strauss, and you see that they've actually gone back and looked at generational labels back hundreds of years. And now whether those were actually what they were called then, I'm not sure. But many generations prior to baby boomers have actually been labeled.
And what typically is the span? So we have baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z. Is that the correct order?
Yeah, well, in our book, we actually go all the way back to the GI generation about 100 years ago because the similarities between the GI generation and Generation Z are actually quite similar. We were looking at the Depression kids versus the Recession kids. So in that sense, it goes from the GI generation to the Silent Generation, which a lot of times people will forget about them, but they were the post-World War II pre-baby boomer children. Then we had baby boomers, which is an incredibly large generation, and then we moved on to Gen X, which was actually considerably smaller, and then bounced back up to a large generation with millennials, and now we're with Generation Z. So that is a progression. And then some speculation on a new generation after Generation Z is Generation Alpha, who they're up, you know, they're just our very young babies, some of our, you know, kids that haven't even been born yet, and toddlers, and even young kids at this point are in Generation Alpha.
And who labels that? I mean, how did we get the name Baby Boomer or Gen Z or Alpha?
You know, well, baby boomers, I'm not entirely sure how they got their name officially. That's the one name that everybody seems to agree on. Gen X, and I don't know who named Gen X, but Gen X got their label because X was this idea of, like, we're doing it our way. We're going to, you know, cross it out, and we're going to say, we're thinking differently, and we're pragmatists, and we're independent thinkers. But when millennials came along, people sort of went alphabetically and just immediately named them Gen Y. And that's why there's work out there that says Generation Y. That was a placeholder name. Millennials became really an easy fit once we, you know, figured out the time period in which they were coming of age around the millennium. Generation Z sort of followed suit with the alphabet. But they've been called other things. They've been called digital natives. They've been called iGen, the pluralists, the founders. And it keeps coming back to Gen Z in many of the research studies and many of the stories that are out there, to the point now where even people who are in this generation seem to have kind of grown to accept or like this name. In one study, they found that there were almost as many names suggested for the generation as there were survey respondents of Generation Z individuals. So there isn't necessarily a one overarching preferred name, although when asked if they liked Generation Z, the Gen Z respondent said, yeah, we're pretty much okay with it. And one respondent even said, you know, Generation Z is kind of a neat name to represent us because Z is the last letter of the alphabet, and we're here to put an end to the status quo.
Who is Generation Z, and why did you choose to focus on that group?
You know, the story goes back to the summer of 2013 when I was working at my previous institution and was working with a summer orientation program where we'd have students who were coming to campus that fall would come in and ask questions at a booth I was working with my colleagues on trying to recruit these students for a leadership program. And I just noticed that there was a different kind of feeling and energy around the students that we were seeing that just felt different than previous years. So much so that some of their questions they were asking and some of the things that they seemed to be interested in were so different that I went back and looked online and said, what's going on here? You know, is there something that I should know about that's making this student group so uniquely different than another? And as a generational researcher, I mean, I'm the first to admit that they're not really stark differences. It's not like the students born the year before are vastly different than the students born that year. But there was enough of a difference for me to say, let's look this up. And I found a generational chart, and in the chart was a generation I'd never heard of called Generation Z. On this particular chart, the birth range was from 1995 to 2010. And so I started to do the math, and I realized in the summer of 2013, that would make these folks, let's see, 17, 18 years old. Well, they're the ones coming to college. So maybe we have a generational shift that we should be focusing on and looking at. And while we didn't have any kind of data on them in college because they hadn't come yet, we did have some data on them in high school and trying to figure out what they might look like when they came to college. So we had something to tap into. But we didn't really have any information on what they were like in college. So we waited a year, my co-author Megan Grace and I, and then the following fall of 2014, we decided to do a study on the first-year students of that cohort. So those would have been students born in 95 and 96 who would have been in that study. And so that's how we first got started. Originally, it was really a practical thing. What is it about these students that we need to know in order to recruit them into this leadership program that we have on our college campus? And from that, just snowballed into, who are these students? Wow, they are very different. They're really unique. And we need to be prepared for them in higher education if we want to recruit and retain them overall, not just in our programs, but just on campus in general.
What tipped you off initially? What was the red flag, so to speak, that you were like, these kids are different?
You know, it really resonated around their idea of social change versus volunteerism. Our leadership program had a heavy volunteer and service component where the students would go out in the community and do a great deal of service. And that had always been a very big recruiting point for us. But the kinds of questions we were getting centered around social change. How am I actually going to go out and make a difference that's going to be sustainable after I leave my service site? And that was a tough question for us to answer. We had been used to doing short-term Saturday service projects. You'd go out and you do these one-time things. And it made us think about the notion that this is a generation that wants to address the underlying cause rather than the symptom of a problem. And so for us, that not only was that just a tip-off, but it was also a means to challenge our notion of what we thought of the idea of service. What is service? Does service always have to be a one-time volunteer thing? Or can it be going out and actually changing the fundamental structure of society as a way to make that service or that volunteerism in general null, like completely eradicated? Do we need to, you know, worry about getting clean water to a community and going out every Saturday and bringing buckets of water, or can we go and build a well? And so this is the group of students who wanted to go build the well.
So 1995 to 2010, why that span? I mean, how does that just a generation?
Well, you know, it's interesting because no two generations are really like the same in terms of their length. Usually people define generations around some type of central context. There's usually some type of an event that people can recall. So if you think back to the assassination of John F. Kennedy, that is something that many baby boomers were alive for. They remember where they were the day of. And while older people also remember that, baby boomers were really kind of coming of age and young adults during that time. You know, you think about Gen X when, you know, they were kids and coming of age, that was the Challenger explosion. That was a really significant event, the coming down of the Berlin Wall, those kinds of things. You get to millennials, and it was 9/11. Generation Z, the oldest of them were in kindergarten when 9/11 happened. So this is a generation that doesn't remember where they were on that day. They didn't watch it on TV. They were too young to be able to do that and only are reading about it in history books. So a lot of times generations are clustered around a context that makes sense for that time period.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I did not know. So the age would be age 7 to 22-year-old. That's the population?
Well, it would be 95 to 2010. Okay. So we're looking at 8 to 23, I believe. And so, you know, we're in the middle of a year, so that kind of fluctuates a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we're looking at basically our third graders through people who are finishing up their master's degree right now. So, I mean, it really does span most of our entire educational system of, you know, elementary, middle, high school, college, and graduate school now where these students are enrolled.
You have said that the Gen Zers are pragmatic and they follow more than they share. Can you tell me about that?
The interesting part about it is that we have to remember that many generations are shaped by their parental generation. Now, not all of those born in Generation Z have Gen X parents, but most of them do. And Gen X has been labeled as pragmatic and independent and in some senses cynical to the process. And they want to, you know, disrupt the process. And they're raising kids that look a little bit like them. And so you're going to see some similarities with that particular generation. But you also have to remember, too, that this is the first generation that has grown up where before they were even born, they had a digital footprint put online by their parents who posted maybe even sonogram pictures of them before they were born. So many of them are growing up where they have a lot of information about them on the web that they never put. So by the time they're old enough to decide what to share, they're holding it a little bit closer to the vest on this one. They said, you know, I already have a whole digital footprint.
I've heard other teachers of the generation talk about them as narcissistic and rebellious. Not that those are necessarily negative, but can you speak to that a little bit?
I think that we really started this habit with millennials where we spent most of our time when we write about generations is writing about all the bad things about them. And that exhausted me a little bit. And while I can appreciate we need to have a balance, I feel like it was a little overdone, especially with millennials. And And so here we are with Gen Z, and a lot of the things that I see coming out are, you know, they do this and they're bad, and they don't put their phones down, and they don't do this. And my co-author and I really, we philosophically feel like we needed to even that out a little bit and be able to present some of the positive elements of them. We also come from a perspective as educators. And as educators, we feel a responsibility to leverage the potential in people. And we think that if we let you know all the ways that they think and they feel without putting any spin on it in that sense, but are able to give you some insight into them, we can also help you leverage the good things so you bring out their, so that readers and listeners and people who watch our presentations will find ways to bring out the positive in them rather than admonishing the negative. And so there are some things we have to be concerned about them. There's a high level of mental health issues with this generation. There's an addiction to cell phones, although arguably many adults have that. There are some things we do need to be concerned about, and we do address those in our book. But we really want to take the stance that people are only as good as those around them that leverage their potential, and teaching them to leverage their own. And that's just a commitment that my co-author and I have in looking at this generation is, you know, we have to be hopeful. They're the young generation right now, and I'm getting older, and I'm dependent on this generation to make the world a better place, because we're leaving it in their hands, and I'm hopeful that they'll do it. Everything I talked about doesn't apply to every single person in the generation. These are just trends of, you know, large groups of folks. But at the same time, I feel hopeful, and I'm excited. I'm a parent of a Gen Zer. I'm an educator of a Gen Zer, and I study Gen Z. So I have great hope and great faith in this generation to do great things, and they already are, and I want to continue to see that happen.
Dr. Corey C. Miller, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.